Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Calum Vargelon.
I am a mess.
And we're joined today by special Christmas consultant.
Oh, a lump of coal now after that announcement. Holy smokes.
Oof.
Yikes. Who shat in your stocking?
No, I spilled wine all over myself earlier.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's one of those days.
Oh, that's
terrible. You know, when you spill wine all over yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, we're here to spread Christmas cheer, so.
It is one of the things at which we're best. Bringing Christmas cheer to everyone, whether or not you celebrate.
You
want it, quite frankly. Not everybody wants some Christmas cheer.
We are firing the first salvos on the war of Christmas.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
But before we get there, it's time for some random crap. What have we got today, people?
We're starting off with a TV show, I believe.
We are. That's right. I watched a TV show. I know I should be talking about more video games, but I've just been playing The Devil in Me, so... You know, I don't have, like, I still think it's great, but it doesn't give me a lot of other video games to talk about. But
right.
I did start after, you know, it was assumed I had started watching it last week. I did start watching Wednesday Addams, the show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Which is just, it's just a ton of fun. Like, it's just a really fun show. I mean, as a, like anyone else, I'm a little skeptical of the way the show Pretty Little Liars has so changed the landscape. That now every single teen show has to be a spooky mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, if ever you were going to make a spooky mystery show, Wednesday Addams is the character to make a spooky mystery show about. Good effects, looks gorgeous. Everybody, all the performers are great. I really enjoy Louis Guzman as Gomez Addams. I think that is dynamite casting.
I heard there's rumor of a spinoff with those two, with Morticia.
I would not be surprised given how just compelling they are. And given what a hit it is for Netflix, chasing that would be a smart thing to do. But it's like, is anybody ever going to replace Raul Julia in my heart? Of course not. But he's a delight as the character.
That's awesome.
So yeah, no, both of them are
the
fantastic.
Only other one who could compete would be Danny Trejo. I think
that would be interesting casting.
Danny Trejo over here. I just don't know if he'd be
really a Gomez Addams type.
No, I think he'd be wonderful at it.
Honestly, Tim Curry was fine when he did it, but you know, it's Tim Curry. Of course, he was.
It's Tim Curry. Yeah.
But one thing that I found really funny was the most baffling thing happened in the first episode. And so I'm watching the first episode, and everyone keeps talking about how pale Wednesday Addams is, and how she's so pale, she's essentially in black and white, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, were they originally going to do a computer effect where she was actually in black and white, and everybody else was in color? Because they keep talking about how much she hates color. And it isn't until I get to the second episode that I realize, oh... When they wrote the pilot, they thought it was going to be a white girl playing Wednesday.
Oh.
Because everyone keeps talking about how pale she is, and she is literally has more color in her face, even with the makeup, than any of the other castmates who are almost entirely, like, super pale white people. And the thing is, and it is clearly what happened, that the script was written, and they didn't change the script after the casting. So after the first episode, nobody ever calls her pale again after the first episode. So they figured it out.
Good retconning.
Oh, no, it was fantastic. But it was very, very funny. All right. But yeah, so Wednesday, liked it a lot. I'm 4 episodes in. Looking forward to finishing up the season.
Right on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Next up, a movie from Rob.
Okay, yes. I watched last night Warriors of Future. No Anglicanized article in that. It's just Warriors of Future.
love it.
2022, long gestating Hong Kong sci-fi action from a visual effects artist, Ang Yen Fei. It's his directorial debut. The year is 2055, and the Earth has been decimated by military robots and global warming and natural disasters. And they, the only surviving members are under a dome, a Skynet, that has been built to protect them. Meanwhile, there is a meteorite from an alien planet, Pandora, wink, wink, that has crashed. And yes, and it leaves this type of, I don't know, mutating alien slash flower slash whatever that is about to decimate the rest of the planet, save for these young local military force led by Dr. Chan, who thinks they find a way to the pistol of this being and eradicate Pandora to purify the air once again. So, with all that said, there was shout outs to Jurassic Park, to Predator, to Iron Man, to James Bond, to Transformers, to Edge of Tomorrow, to Alien, to Terminator in this. And that's just what I counted last night watching it. It is hokey as all hell. It's some dodgy visual effects, but God damn if it wasn't fun. It's an hour and a half. It's just light, airy. You have the little girl who is fatherless, and you have the young, the lead actor who is childless, lost his child. You know, I wonder if they're going to form a bond or not. You have the guy who created the Sky Dome himself, who is actually the military head. So he realizes that if they do eradicate this, then he's going to lose millions on the Sky Dome that he's created. So, and if it wasn't enough of a clue-in, he sits very majestic-like in a wheelchair with one black glove and and a Hugo Boss, like Nazi era, like get up.
Oh, so that's amazing.
It is. You can read it from a mile away, but it is still super fun. And it's worth checking out.
Okay. Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun. And honestly, the description makes me reminds me to ask. I told everybody to watch Space Sweepers, right?
I told everyone to watch Space Sweepers.
Okay, Rob, have you seen Space Sweepers?
No.
Magnificent.
Oh, it's fun.
Korea's biggest budget movie ever. An incredible just sci-fi action movie that is sweet and action-packed, and the villain is explicitly Elon Musk. They are not subtle about the fact that the villain is openly Elon Musk, and that is the only way to describe him. It's the lead dwarf from Lord of the Rings, and he's just playing Elon Musk.
I am putting it on my next Netflix queue as we speak.
100% Space Sweepers, don't miss it.
I am there.
All right. Next up, DM.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I was sick for quite a few days there. I don't know if anyone remembers how terrible I sounded.
It wasn't great.
No. So I did nothing but lie on the couch, watch movies for 2 days straight when I wasn't working. And eventually ended up watching Den of Thieves because I was watching a bunch of Drag Butler films.
That's a very fun movie.
Because all you want to do, right, when you're sick, is just want to watch stuff blow up. I want to watch people get punched in the face, and I want to watch stuff blow up.
Yep.
And that somehow led me to Den of Thieves. And I gotta say, like, I didn't know really what to expect going in. I think I enjoyed it. Jury's still out, honestly. I think it's longer than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure who I was supposed to be rooting for. Even though I've seen the movie and I know how it ends. Still a little unclear.
Well, it's weird because like the stakes are that these guys want to like steal some money, right? Steal some money that's going to be destroyed anyway. So honestly, who cares? They're not stealing from any people. And they don't seem to want to hurt anybody. But Gerard Butler really seems like he wants to take them down. And he's coded as the hero. It's an interesting... It is really an interesting movie.
He is. Like, because he's the cop who's after this gang of thieves.
Yeah.
But he's a terrible person.
Exactly. He's a trash dude. Yeah.
So it's hard to be on his side. And like, I love a heist movie in which you're on the thieves' side,
yep.
but these thieves are all kind of shitty people also.
I know.
So it's
like, it's an interesting movie. Like, it's a better movie than I thought it was going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really liked it.
And I have to say, ultimately, a little dissatisfying because when you get to the point of the movie where you see how the heist happened,
yeah.
I feel like they left a bunch of stuff out.
They did. They do skip over some of the details of exactly how this heist works.
I don't think the movie knows how the heist the heist actually works.
100% you're right about that.
Yeah, a bit of a problem.
Still a fun ride though. And I'm not gonna pretend
still
it's
still a fun
not.
Ride. I would recommend Law Abiding Citizen over Den of Thieves.
Oh yeah.
If you have to choose between two Gerard Butler movies, and that's what you have available to you for some reason.
Like,
because I just really like Law Abiding Citizen.
Well, Law Abiding Citizen is
I'd lobby for Greenland any day.
Oh, I've still got to see that.
It's okay. Greenland's pretty good.
Greenland is really good.
I've still got to see it. All right, so I'm going to put that on the list. But Law Abiding Citizen, it's the most bizarre movie because, like, okay.
Because it thinks Jamie Foxx
is the hero.
Clearly, he's the villain.
I feel like, okay, maybe Gerard Butler shouldn't have blown up all of the DAs. But, like, I'm still on his side?
Yes. Yes.
Like, maybe he went a little too far, but I only think he went a little too far.
Have either of you seen Cop Shop?
No, I haven't seen Cop Shop.
I have seen Cop Shop. That's a fun movie.
Is it? Okay. Because it's Carnahan. It's Joe Carnahan. So
I love him.
And I usually like his style, but Gerard Butler in the lead there, but I have yet to see that. So
What is the Carnahan movie I watched like a couple of weeks ago? It was whatever his most recent one was.
What did he do?
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Boss Level?
Yes, it was Boss Level. It was Boss Level. Yeah.
God, that was fun.
Finally got around to watching it. Masterpiece. Seriously.
Yeah.
Such a good
movie. Just a masterpiece. And I just love that it was like, yep, I'm going to do everything I can. My new project is in the same way that like the In Bruges guy, he made Seven Psychopaths and he was pissed off that Sam Rockwell didn't get an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor. And so he says, I'm going to write and direct a movie that exists only to get Sam Rockwell an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor. And that movie is Three Billboards, and it won.
Yep.
Like, and he did, in fact, do that. But it's like, that's the only reason that movie exists, to get him that nomination.
Frank Grillo is such an...
But that's my point, which is he said to Joe Carnahan did the exact same thing, where he's like, I'm going to make a movie that exists only to turn Frank Grillo into a giant action star. And had there not been a plague and had it been properly marketed, that is exactly what would have happened.
Absolutely.
Because he is Mel Gibson without the baggage. And that's why you've got Mel Gibson in there as the bad guy, because he's supposed to be handing off being Mel Gibson to Frank Grillo in that movie. But because of the plague, it didn't happen.
Well, we've talked about this before, though, because we really, like, we like Frank Grillo, and we really liked him in, like, Purge 3. I don't remember what the actual title of that movie is. Purge 2?
Yeah,
because he does a fantastic job in that movie.
Yeah.
But, as you say, Rob, totally underappreciated.
Yeah. He is! And he's got the best hair.
He's also great in Purge 3. He's also great in Purge 3, where he's just the president's bodyguard, but he doesn't have all of the emotional stuff to play that he had in Purge 2. He doesn't get to act.
I wasn't thinking about
the
emotional stuff. I'm thinking purely
about just when he's kicking ass. Oh, okay. Then you were thinking of the right one. I thought I was just so blown away that he managed to do all of the great acting stuff in Purge 2 while kicking so much ass. But you're right. Purge 3 is where he kicks the most ass.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I guess our big takeaway today is we love Frank Grillo and would like to see him in more movies. I don't know that that's where we plan to end up, but here we are.
But here we are.
But it's a fine place to be.
100% Frank Grillo, you're the king. All right. Okay, next up, I believe we have a list.
We do. Ooh. Speaking of Boss Level.
Yeah.
Our list today comes from Film School Rejects, which I don't think we visited in quite some time.
Yeah, we haven't heard from
them
in ages.
And it is, the list is 11 still great Mel Gibson movies that never fail to entertain.
Aww. All right. Let's go for it.
All right. The list is from 2017, so bear that in mind when we run through these numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
So no boss.
And we begin with number 11. We're counting down.
Thank heavens.
Bloodfather.
I haven't seen Bloodfather.
I don't know what this is.
I remember it coming out. I didn't see it.
No.
Okay.
Okay. None of us did. Keep going.
Oh, all right. Okay, fine then. and it's the reason there are 11 films on this list is because he wanted to include Bloodfather.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's high praise.
Okay.
So. Maybe checking in. Maybe we keep it in mind for a checking in on late period.
Gibson episode
in February or something.
All right. Okay, so number 10 is Signs. I like Signs.
I still like Signs a lot.
Yep.
I think it's
a creepy movie.
It is. Is it his best movie?
No.
But it's good. It's a lot. Like, it's atmospheric as hell.
Super fun.
Yeah, it is.
And famously.
And it has one of the best monster reveals, honestly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible monster reveal.
That scene with the aliens on the TV. Oh, my God. So well done.
Famously, they were in pre-production for this movie when Mark Ruffalo found out he had a brain tumor and had to drop out of the movie. And that's why he doesn't play the brother in that movie.
Interesting.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then he didn't work for 2 years because he was recovering from a brain tumor.
Drop a bomb on us like that, Jesus.
I thought everybody knew that about him. Yeah, he recovered from a brain tumor. Yeah. All right.
Okay, number 9, The Patriot.
Okay, this is trash from beginning to end.
And I'm not going to.
I have watched it. It is ahistorical, kind of covering up for what monsters early Americans were. Super racist trash.
Totally apologetic, yeah.
Yeah, it is apologia. All of the British, I'm not saying the British were fantastic people, but they are essentially monstrous vampires in this who love nothing but slaughtering of innocents to the point where they take actual massacres that American revolutionaries did. And in the movie, they say they were done by the British to American revolutionaries. Yeah.
Ooh,
it's bad.
Jesus.
Yep. Yeah.
That is bad. Okay. Moving on. Number 8, Chicken Run.
Okay, well, of course, Chicken Run's a perfect film. Nothing wrong with Chicken Run.
When you put Mel Gibson behind an animated chicken, then it's okay. It becomes socially acceptable.
I'm going to say it. I think this might have created more vegetarians than Okja. I think this movie, like, if we wait another 15 years, we're going to be able to interview like a whole generation about how this movie convinced them not to eat meat.
Not to eat chicken.
Yeah.
Well, no, but meat generally. I don't think the people who watch this movie are going to be like, wow, the horrible experience of those chickens, but I'll still kill cows.
Hit me the burger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
you could be right. I could be wrong. And people just gave up chicken, but still like eat veal, but I doubt it. All right.
Oh, see, you're talking to like a carnivore. Anyway, okay. Number 7, Tequila Sunrise.
I really like this movie.
That was fun.
Yeah. I do this movie also just because I love Kurt Russell so much.
I know.
Yes.
And it's a great, I mean, it's like the two of them in a neo noir. Is that Paul Schrader?
Oh, God.
Robert Towne, that's it.
Not Paul Schrader. Yeah. It's Robert Towne. Yep. Yeah. Like in this just great neo-noir, both of them are cast really interestingly. Just like such a good movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, nine. Okay. Number 6, a movie I absolutely love, Maverick.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. So much fun.
Yeah.
We talked about that when we did the Richard Donner part. I mean, that was him at his height, man.
It really was.
It was just a blast.
Firing on all cylinders. Yep. It is a sequel to the series, and he's playing Maverick Jr. It is so much fun from beginning to end. Only thing wrong with it, really didn't manage to get a cameo from Roger Moore in there. He was still alive, you know. They could have figured it out or some way to get him in there as the British Maverick from the show. But anyway.
Right.
All right.
Okay, number 5. Oh, also a movie I enjoyed, Ransom.
Yeah, Ransom's a fun movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. I don't think it's a great movie, I don't think it's, you know, payback, but I really do like Ransom.
It's still fun.
Or conspiracy theory.
Or, oh, conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory. Right?
Please tell me that's next on the list. I totally forgot conspiracy theory.
Prepare to be disappointed. The next movie on the list is The Year of Living Dangerously.
Oh.
I like that, but I haven't seen it.
It's a good
decades.
Movie. I mean, I remember it. Sorry. I saw it when it originally came out on like not HBO, but like the Super
you
Channel.
Did not see this movie in 1982.
No. I saw it on Super Channel back in the day. Yeah. Like when you know how on Super Channel when there was a new Mel Gibson movie, they would, you know, like bring out all of the old Mel Gibson movies.
Okay.
And so I would saw that, and I saw Gallipoli and all of that stuff on cable. So I saw it back when I was a kid, and I remember thinking it was good, but I haven't seen it since, so I can't wait.
And it was Peter Weir. I mean, especially in the 80s, Peter Weir was just at his height between that, Mosquito Coast. You know, he was just phenomenal.
Yeah, no, Peter Weir was fantastic. All right.
Okay, number three, Payback.
My personal favorite, that period Mel Gibson movie. Love it from beginning to end.
All he wants is $70,000.
I think it's better than Point Blank. I know a lot of people will disagree with me on that. I think it's a better movie than Point Blank. I think it's so satisfying. I think Greg Henry is incredible in this movie. Like, I love this movie. Saw it in theaters opening night. I've seen it a dozen times since. The like writer director's cut, if you've seen it, is even better.
Oh,
really?
I don't know if I have. Honestly.
Oh, is that Brian? Did Brian
Helgeland wrote and directed it?
Yeah.
Because I think I think they knew each other because maybe he wrote Conspiracy Theory.
Okay.
It might be Conspiracy Theory. I think he wrote another Mel Gibson movie, but yeah, it's Brian Helgeland wrote and directed, and it's just great. And it's like it's not what people wanted out of a Mel Gibson movie in the '90s.
Right.
But it's what they got.
But it's what they got, and it's what they deserved.
It was a precursor to the Mel Gibson that we would receive in the late
period Mel Gibson. That's absolutely right.
You're not going to talk about what happened in between.
Right.
No, we are not.
But I will say, that movie, talk about Frank Grillo. If you want the female equivalent to Frank Grillo, Maria Bello.
In that movie, Oh, she's so good.
She's so good in whatever she's in, but she always gets these trash little movies. It's a shame. She's such a great actor.
Oh, absolutely. All right.
All right.
Okay. Any guesses as to number two and number one?
So it's not, Conspiracy Theory isn't on the list.
Mad Max.
Conspiracy Theory is not on the list. I'm sorry to say.
I don't think Road Warrior could be number one.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess Road Warrior is number one, but I don't think Mad Max is going to be on the list.
All right. What about number two?
Braveheart is definitely top of them.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to say Lethal Weapon Mad Max.
All right. Number two is both Lethal Weapons 1 and 2.
Okay. I think we can let them do that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. And number one is The Road Warrior.
Yes! Called it. Nice. Boom!
Nice. Yep. Solid list.
I think that's the first time you've ever been right.
I know. I never get these lists right. I never, under any circumstances, get these lists right. But I gotta say, once it became clear that this was not a list of just obscure Mel Gibson movies,
it
did help me a lot. But I just love that the state we're in, just as a people, we have to say, the Mel Gibson movies that we can still enjoy, despite, you know...
his racist, misogynistic...
monstrous amount of anti-Semitism.
Christ-loving,
by Holocaust deniers. It's unfortunate, but
it's very unfortunate. So. But you know,
The
art and the artist. And well, we'll talk about how much we can do that a little later in the episode.
Apparently, it's all the rage in the United States right now. So
I know. Perfect time to be talking about Mel Gibson, huh?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Now that anti-Semitism is going mainstream. Sorry, I know you guys don't listen to the Profiling Criminal Minds podcast, but after. After we did a special, that's fine. I know. You don't have to laugh. You're a horrible person. Let's continue. After Dave Chappelle went on Saturday Night Live and did what he did, we literally did a like, and then Jon Stewart had his dumb as hell response to it. We actually did an hour long episode the next day just talking about how pissed we were that people weren't taking anti-Semitism seriously enough. Yeah. And then it's like, here we are 2 weeks later and Kanye West. You know? So it's nice to be vindicated.
When he makes Alex Jones look like the rational actor in this, then you should be scared.
Well, no, but it's like Alex Jones.
Both those guys, seriously. Well,
he is and has always been a con man. And he spent the entire interview being like, no, don't say it out loud or we can't make money.
Yep, exactly.
Whereas Kanye is an actual insane person, so of course he's going to say it out loud. Jesus told him all of this stuff personally.
Of course.
Yeah, so the world's in a scary place. Let's watch Mel Gibson movies.
Yes.
Speaking of Mel Gibson movies, he's never done a lot of horror movies. Is that something he's going to start doing soon?
Oh, man, I wish, but I can't say for sure because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Night of the Bastard.
Okay, tell me more.
Oh my God. Okay.
Well, so that could be a Mel Gibson movie.
100%.
I really could, honestly.
Quite easily,
like that?
Yes.
Okay. Disgruntled hermit Reed lives a solitary life in the desert. After chasing away a group of youths trying to party near his home, Reed's peaceful life is violently upheaved when a group of savage cultists lay siege to his house.
Oh, no.
Forced to partner with one of the partygoers, Reed and his newfound colleague, misuse of the word colleague there, must defend themselves into the night, all while long buried and disturbing secrets are revealed to him as part of the cult's evil plan.
Oh. Tell me more.
Love a movie about an evil Satanist cult.
Yeah. No, we can't get enough of them.
Put that out there.
Race the Devil. Yeah. Boom. All-time classic.
Great movie.
All right. So, who made this trailer?
I mean, it looks okay. I don't know who any of these people are. London May, Maya Hudson, and Hannah Pierce.
Okay. I don't know any of those people.
Don't know them.
Nothing to me. It was filmed in California. Oh. And that's really all I can tell you.
Do you think it's going to be worth us checking out? You do love cults.
I think eventually we probably will.
Okay.
It's only because we do love satanic cults.
We do love satanic cult movies, like,
and
way
bastards.
Too much.
Yeah.
Also bastards.
Yes.
And bastards.
All right, let's get into the movies we did watch this week, starting with...
Christmas Crime Story. We found this while cruising Just Watch.
As one does.
Movies. Genre film.
Yeah. As long as the genre isn't family, just FYI. We're up for any genre that's not family. Christmas action, Christmas horror, Christmas heist, Christmas thriller, anything you want, just not Christmas family films.
Or romance. I mean, we're not going to watch a bunch of Hallmark movies.
That's true.
Make that very clear.
Right. You know, now that you say that out loud, that would be the easiest thing in the world to find Christmas romance
movies. And they're filmed like 2 blocks from my house, so it's, oh my God.
Yeah.
All right, I'm giving you the option.
I haven't written one, but I've had the option to write one. That's true,
yeah. Time. Okay.
All right.
You can have the just normal synopsis or the mean synopsis.
I think everyone knows what we want.
Yes.
You want the
we
mean
deserve
one.
Of course we deserve it.
Okay.
You saw the
All
movie.
Right,
of course we deserve the mean
I
one.
Did. Okay, here we go. I like Tarantino movies. You like Tarantino movies. And the filmmakers like Tarantino movies. It's just too bad they don't have the cinematography or the editing skills to pull it off.
I still remember, I don't know what it was called, Wild 7, something like that. One of the last movies Robert Forster was in, right? Well, not last, but pretty low on the list, this god-awful, like, student film level screenplay that got made into a movie. And it's just like, it was indicative of all of the awfulness that came from a whole generation of people watching Pulp Fiction and saying, Reservoir Dogs and saying, I can do that.
Yeah.
And all of the movies we suffered through because of that. And this gave me flashbacks to that.
Yeah.
Well, the glut of films that populated the like late 90s to early 2000s from like 21 Grams, Crash, Babel, Magnolia. I mean, and these, some are good, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, sure, Magnolia.
Well, no, I'm just saying. Some
but you're
good,
right. You're absolutely right that it was a trend that included all of
these interwoven storylines just were.
I know, right? And yeah. I'm done with the. I know that's not, it's not 100% germane. We're not going to get into it, but I'm also done with title cards in those kinds of movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. All right, let's get into the thing we're actually here to talk about.
Oh, my goodness. So, yes, it's a bunch of storylines that sort of interweave and connect in weird ways. And it's unfair to say it centers around this one diner, but at some point everybody ends up in this diner.
Yeah.
On mm-hmm. Christmas Eve. And it's just, I'm, okay, my cards on the table. I nod it off.
Yeah.
And that's not a good sign.
I don't think you
I had trouble paying like attention. I'm really not going to pretend I didn't.
Thriller type movie. Yeah.
But what was utterly frustrating is that, man, they nailed the lighting. They did such a good job with the lighting in there, good sound, and there were a couple good performances in there. Yeah. So
no, absolutely there were, but the camera work was just so bland.
Yeah, there were.
And the script itself isn't great, and then you can, like, there's a lot you can do to the editing suite if you want to make this kind of movie. And they
tighter
really
and more livelier.
Yeah.
Like, you can make even if you don't have the best material, you can make it pop and jump and move forward quickly. And this didn't have that.
If you're limited, and I realize they were limited, they were working with limited budget. So, but if you're limited to
time,
solely just the writing, then and they had some great close-up shots. I mean, it was really well handled there, but have them say something that's engaging, that's interesting, that's telling. You know, these conversations were just so dull and
right. Yeah. And they all went on for way too long.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
God.
I mean, again, nothing will ever be as bad as that movie. The Robert Forster is in it movie I'm talking about, where literally they pause the movie for 4 minutes to talk about how much they like the movie Battle Royale. But this challenged me in that way.
Like,
yeah. You're not revealing it to me anything to me.
Phone you up and to tell you to watch this movie at normal speed.
Damn!
I came very close to doing so.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. Thank you for that. Because so I can only slow. Imagine what it was like for you. No, but my point is, it didn't get to that level. But the fact is, like, you can write speeches and you can write dialogue that keeps you captivated for 10 minutes of a stretch of one conversation. But you have to understand how to build dramas and peaks and valleys and revealing character in those conversations. And we didn't have that here. We just had conversations.
And for that, if you're going to have an interwoven narrative like that, then have some sort of connected tissue that, aside from them just kind of bumping into each other randomly on the street, these people engaged with one another as though they were wearing, you know, their human suits, and this is the first time they've ever spoken English.
Oh my God.
Well, no, wow. I mean, just really, like, here's a perfect example. So there's one guy who's standing out in front as Santa Claus, out in front of said restaurant, he's sitting there ringing a bell. I'm guessing he's from a Salvation Army, but we never really know. Mm-hmm. And then this woman comes up to him after caroling, saying, "Hey, I saw you trying to catch a peek earlier," and flirting with him, introducing herself as a character. And then he says, "Okay, well, so what are you doing after?" She's like, "Oh, so no, I'm married. See ya." You know, it was like one of these things where, like, well, who engages in conversations like that? She was the one who was totally flirting with him to begin with.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, proudly displays her wedding ring and says, "All right, fuck off, you creep." You know, I mean, it was just, it wasn't human interaction. It was just dialogue for the sake of dialogue.
To make matters worse, that woman claims that she's Jewish, isn't doing anything on Christmas Day because it's not important to her. And we find out later she's married to another character and they clearly celebrate Christmas.
Yeah.
What the shit?
I know.
But I mean, it's possible that her whole thing is. Well, I mean, if you're going to make a character whose whole thing is that they are constantly screwing with people and telling lies about themselves, that has to be integral to that character's journey and their role in the
film. Exactly. Exactly.
It can't just be a thing that makes you go, wait.
I don't think she's lying. She really is Jewish, but you're married. Yeah, that's also true. But Christmas is meaningful to your family, your husband and your daughters who aren't Jewish. Yeah, you're not raising those girls in a Jewish house.
Right.
So come on.
Yeah, no, it's most frustrating.
the most engaging, I think, the most captivating, engaging person ends up getting shot in the first scene. I mean, we later see her, but I think the liquor store clerk was probably the one who I'd want to spend time with the most, because she just seemed the most naturalistic on screen. She talked like a human. She was, I mean, and she was engaging, but then again, she got shot. She was only in it for like 2 minutes.
So. I thought Mall Santa did a pretty good job.
Mall Santa was good, except when he had that outburst with his, that just didn't seem
germane to the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a little odd.
Okay.
Yeah. But liquor, so it just, I don't know, the whole thing kind of just fell flat.
Super flat, yes.
And the one, Adrian Paul's character, who had, you know, obviously this psychosis that was manifested as what Vincent, this guy with him. I mean, that just kind of came and went. It didn't feel like it was part of this universe.
I know, it had nothing to do with anything. And like, right, as soon as I saw that other dude, I'm like, oh, he's a crazy person, yeah, and this is his hallucination. I knew immediately that he wasn't real. I'm like, there's nothing, there's no mystery, there's no thrills, there's nothing to keep me engaged here. I'm just watching these people stumble through life, and it's really depressing.
And there were times where
part of it is like, the is it a writer director? I didn't check. Because it feels like the kind of thing that had to be made by one person.
Don't know.
Two people would have, a second person might have called them out on some of this stuff. But it's like, it really feels like someone who is not super creative, but so they think all of these cliched ideas they have are original. And so they think that just presenting these cliches is enough to do, because they're going to blow everybody's mind.
And I'm all on board for like an anti-Christmas movie, which is kind of what it set up to be at the beginning of it. Like saying like the Yuletide, I forget, the embers of the Yuletide burn in hell or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm all for that. Like, let's get an anti, but there was no revelatory moment that made it feel as though it was quote unquote a Christmas movie. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have any of that one moment that kind of had someone come to a realization about themselves, or the closest thing was the lead guy's name was Chris DeJesus. Was the lead young cop's name. And it did seem like there were some parts of it that were, seemed oddly proselytizing. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but
a little,
there was just little shades of it here and there.
Here and there, subtly.
I don't know. Anyway,
so yeah, it's just like, this is, again, it goes back to the script of like, you needed to restart from the beginning and figure out what you wanted to accomplish and find a much clever way to do it, because you just didn't have it.
Yeah, because like, here's a perfect example, right? Like, Mall Santa, when he stumbles upon the liquor store robbery, he picks up the gun. Who the fuck picks up a gun?
Exactly.
Unless there's literally zombies coming up on you, you don't pick up a gun. Ever.
And the only reason he's picking up that gun is so that he can hang himself later in the film, because he thinks there's no way that he's going to beat this liquor store rap. Right. So it just, like,
and he's got a cancer kid at home.
Yeah. And he's got a cancer kid at home. So it's just, it's such bad writing.
Absurdly contrived.
There were flashes of unrelentingly depressing. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm right there with you.
And the movie can't even stick the landing, because then we get the happy ending.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. All of that stuff, we'll just hand wave it away. It's fine. Yep. It didn't really happen that way. Okay.
It sucked because there were flashes of talent throughout, whether it was in the acting. Yeah. I thought the mother could have been, you know, given better dialogue, she could have given a really good performance in there. That was just, I mean, you know, and like I said before, with the lighting, lighting and sound are two things that always can bring down a movie, and they were able to get both of those. Nail those down, but the rest of it was just, it was just an anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so, it's unfortunate. Reminds me of that Halloween movie we watched.
Which one? Oh, right. The Halloween movie. Yeah. Right. Where he, where there's no reason for it to be set on Halloween, because that has nothing to do with Halloween.
Oh.
Yeah. When honestly, it felt more like a, like it should have been a Christmas crime movie because it's about him doing his Ghost of Future, Ghost of Christmas Past kind of thing. Why wasn't that movie set at Christmas now that we say it out loud?
Hey, why can't we just swap holidays for these two
movies?
Why is this woman hiring a hitman to kill her husband? I don't understand what that was all about.
Yeah.
No payoff for that. Because he passes them in the street. So you just pay this guy 10 grand for no reason at all?
Yeah.
Because you were going to kill him yourself? And then he got the jump on you? I don't understand what I'm watching. Honestly.
Nope.
And it's not because I fell asleep.
Okay, so now we can move on to a movie where it's very clear what's going on. No subtlety here.
Our second movie tonight, if you haven't figured it out, is Fat Man. Santa's been having a rough couple of years, what with the kids being shits and all. Meanwhile, a little shit hires a hitman to take out Santa.
Santa Claus, motherfucker.
I thought he did a great job. And I don't know what voice that was, but it was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
On point.
I mean, whatever I liked or disliked about this movie, I'm not going to say a single bad thing about Mel Gibson's performance. I think he was just dead on in this movie for exactly what the movie needed him to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it was actually perfect
casting because, his kind of grizzled sandpaper-like appeal at this moment was perfect for that role.
The exact Santa they wanted. A guy who is just like, for whom things used to be great.
Exactly.
And he used to be full of joy and he used to be happy and now the world has worn him down. To the point where he sees no joy in anything.
Yep.
Not sure why Santa's getting a subsidy and why he needs to use money really in any capacity.
Well, I mean, I think you just have to accept that in the world of this, Santa is, you know, a functionary.
Capitalist.
And, yeah, a capitalist functionary.
But he's not, though. I mean...
No, but I think the idea is, and this is my just conception, the idea is that as toys got more complicated, it required more technology to build them, which costs real money. He can't magic them into existence. So he wasn't going to be able to be Santa anymore. But as he says in the movie, the government needs there to be a Santa because Christmas is so good for the economy. So they subsidize him.
Right, but then if Christmas is good for the economy, why is he even bothering to make... Why doesn't he just be the Amazon delivery guy?
Oh, yes. But I think the idea is, in this world, they feel like Santa has to be around in order for Christmas to happen.
I think it's a problem for the movie because they put so much emphasis on him needing money.
Yeah.
And then they bring in the army and this contract that he does. But ultimately, there's like no payoff for any of that because having all these army guys around doesn't stop Walton Goggins from effectively carrying out his mission.
No.
So and that's what I was hoping for. When I was watching, I was hoping for some sort of long form version of the fictional film from Scrooge, The Day the Reindeer Died.
The Night the Reindeer Died. Yeah.
Like this big
Scrooged
guns ablazing finale in there. And it just took a wild detour and decided to go the personal route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you wanted to commit to that.
Mrs. Claus had nothing to do except bake cookies. And that's.
Bake cookies.
A little disappointing because she's a great actor.
She is.
You feel like put a gun in her hands, which they did briefly for one brief.
She does save the day at the end, but that's after a long film of doing very little.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like you could have written a larger part for Ruth.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I like that the villain was a Ben Shapiro type. That made me happy. Just like this insufferable. This insufferable child who thinks he deserves to be treated better than everybody else.
But like
for no reason.
Thing though. Oh yeah, that kid was great.
Yeah.
Did he remind you?
No, like really easy to hate, which was enjoyable. Yeah.
He reminded me of like if Ben Stiller's character from Royal Tenenbaums like met Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. Like
yeah, a combination. That's definitely the vibe. Like this this prematurely old.
Right? Yes.
Fucking
yes.
Yeah, this prematurely old
scumbag who's always in a blazer.
Who's willing to abduct a fellow classmate.
Yeah. Because he's so upset over not winning a
because he gets runners up at a
energy of the future in an energy of the future science fair.
Yes.
Which raises the question, was that some kind of comment on the fact that like the kids are moving away because Santa brings coal or the energy of the future? Like, were they going for something there that I didn't get?
Well, I think therein lies one of the fundamental issues with Fat Man is that there was so much potential for some satirical or topical bite to it that it never really followed through with. You know, in this world that they created, I mean, it given that they gave so much weight to the world changing and how the kids don't believe anymore and all of this satire that they could have gone with and they just kind of abandoned it for a shootout at the end.
Well, not only that, but it's like at the start of the movie, kids aren't good anymore. Santa's depressed. And I'm like, okay, so he's going to have to find the spirit of the season. And the answer is no, he's going to have to form a police state.
Yeah.
Well, and then it's like, and then right at the end of the movie,
which I can't tell you how much I love that scene at the end where he shows up and just like lays into that shitty kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has one eye to the Odin comparison to the origins of the modern Santa impossible to ignore.
Yes, I got my own.
Wisdom. Oh my God.
Well, no, but I mean, it's true. He lost his eye to learn how the world really works and what he has to do. So the Odin stuff is right there in the surface. Yes.
I get it. Thank you.
All right. Just making sure you got
it. I'm so drunk that I don't understand what we're talking
all right. about. No, but the thing that bothered me was, like, is its inability to, like, the movie, like, right before the little final shootout with Walton Goggins, who's a ton of fun in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Really, really enjoyed him in this movie. Right?
Yeah, I just wish they would have delved more into his character, but go ahead.
Well, no, but that's what I was about to say. Like, right at the end of this movie, the movie kind of drops a bomb on you in that, like, because it's hinted at a little and then it comes right into the end where he's like, hi, I was monstrously abused for my entire childhood and I acted out as a result. And as a consequence, I got coal every Christmas and you never treated me well.
Right.
What the hell good are you, Santa? Like, what purpose do you serve if how you treat an abused child is to punish them further?
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, that's a really good point, Walton Goggins. I wonder what the film's response is. Oh, it doesn't have one.
It doesn't. Exactly.
Yeah, because it went too far and didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
and that's the real issue. Like,
is a problem for the but within the character of Walton Goggins, you have this guy who's like, quite apart from him being a hitman, which is very funny.
It is.
He has this thing where he collects other people's gifts from Santa, which is so interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
And you can do so much with that. And
exactly.
You know, they use it for a cheap laugh and like.
But instead, they use that in a cheap laugh, and then they give him like just these mild eccentricities that really don't go anywhere. That he carries a hamster with him and takes
wherever
him
he goes. Yeah, you know?
Pet store is. Thank you.
Right.
I want to know.
It's just weird to watch a movie filmed in your home, in and around your hometown. I lived in Toronto for so many years, and I was never as weirded out as I am when I watch a film.
And you just see stuff three blocks from where you lived. Yeah.
Yeah. And please tell me that the Canadian guards at the border there, if someone was like, I'm coming up to kill some things and smiles like the Walton Goggins smile like that, that someone wouldn't say, we might want to follow this guy a little bit.
They're a little bit more on the ball, I think.
Yeah. It is a comedy. We're fine with that. No, but it's like, I don't understand why. Like, you've got all of these army guys there solely so you can have this big gunfight with Walton Goggins, and we have this big action scene where the elves are in danger, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it didn't really add anything to the movie, right? And all of that fighting has nothing to do with the themes or really the plot. It's like, why didn't they let Walton Goggins have an actual point of view and an like respect his point of view?
Yes.
And then like explore his and Santa's relationship as he comes to kill Santa. Like, what kind of guy wants is fine to take a job coming and killing Santa? How did he get to this?
Right.
How did he become this person? And what is Santa's responsibility for the state of this guy? And it's like, boom, there's your movie.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. They don't spend time with him or with, I mean, with the Kris Kringle. Okay, that's great. You're going to put him in this world. But then they give him these magical healing abilities, and they never explain any of that either. It's like, well, how did he get so, you know, what's that?
And because we know that he has magical healing abilities, I'm like, all right, so there's really nothing on the line here.
There's no stakes.
Yeah. Well, no, but there could have, and there could have been stakes had the stakes been emotional and about Santa's values.
Yes.
And how his conflict and his conflict with Walton Goggins. Like, the crazy part of this movie is we know Santa's going to be okay.
Already depressed, and he pulls himself out of it by the time Walton Goggins shows up.
Even shows up.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I know that the film wants to be just like bleak and sardonic and just gruesome about everything. And that's kind of like the whole raison d'etre of it, of being like this intense. And the joke is that it's Santa, but it's this, you know, bleak hitman movie. Like, I get what it's going for.
Sure.
But I think this is the key part. It's like they had all of the pieces of a really interesting thing to do here, where you have this Santa who has, you know, corporate pressures, and you have the Santa who himself has lost the meaning of Christmas, and you have this hitman who's had a grudge against Santa for years. Like, Santa never even finds out about his collection of toys. Does Santa never find out that Walton Goggins has a giant display case full of Santa's gifts that he made for everybody but Walton Goggins?
It was the opening shot too. I mean, that should have been the callback, you know, that he's the bat should have been used again or something, you know?
Something. Like, they should have, instead of doing all of this stuff with the action scene and the elves and all of the army guys Walton Goggins had to kill very easily. Very easily.
Yeah, and
indeed.
How come we haven't seen like the elves haven't been armed? We watch them go through all this shit where they have their bells cut off and they have to follow, you know, they're under the rule of the army. And it's like, and then that whole conversation about like the army guy trying to tell the elves how to live their lives. And number seven's like, dude, you know what the fuck you're talking about?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It's just like, it was a lot of fun. But at the end of the day, it's like,
elves
are just elves and it doesn't matter. And these army guys suck at their job. So,
and let's face it. I mean, the elves, even before the military guys got there, they did not live the most extravagant. I mean, they were stuck in an underground bunker with thousands of them. And they just kind of barely marched along. I don't think so. I mean, Santa himself or Kris Kringle said, you know, it was made by some 6-year-old who, you know, these toys are made by 6-year-olds who probably got a pack of gum at the end of the day.
China, like,
And I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Chinese sweatshops.
What about your slaves?
Isn't your, exactly.
Right.
Like, let's address that, guys.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating because you feel like there are all the pieces here for a much, much better movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because if the elves are fine being slaves, right?
Yeah.
Well, explain why the elves are fine being slaves, and maybe actually have the fact that the elves are being fine with being slaves because they understand they're serving the greater purpose of, you know, bringing people joy at Christmas. And like, all you have to do is, you know, look at a list and deliver toys once a year. We're here every day making sure people have a good Christmas. So why do you think, you know, we're essentially living as slaves to make sure people have a good Christmas. Why are you the one who gets to be depressed? That's the kind of stuff this movie could have examined, and it doesn't do anything interesting like that. It's weird.
A lot of wasted potential.
A movie that wants to be better than it is, you know.
And had the potential to. The casting was dead on. They had all the right actors involved. They had, you know, the style was there. It was shot really well. But then everything just seemed to be just half-assed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Even the music, too. Mondo Boys, they're great.
Yeah.
They scored the shit out of Phoenix Forgotten. And then this is like, whatever. It's
just kind of there.
So,
yep. Yeah. So, yeah. Fat Man... Yeah, it's that rare, like, movie where you're just, this had all of the pieces it needed to be, I'm not going to say a great film, but, like, a really, really fun, surprising, you know, action Christmas romp that had something to say.
Yeah.
And then it just, it took the easiest version, it became the easiest version of itself.
Yeah.
You know, again, if you want Santa to become... an immortal police state scaring children into obedience, you got to do more work to earn that. Because they're being one...
I am here for it. I will watch that movie.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I wrote an outline for that movie 20 years ago of people living in the Santa police state. I am 100% here for that, but you need us to get there by more than there being one. Exactly. But you need to get us there via something more than there is one unbelievably shitty child out there. Like you need it to come from a bigger thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, maybe Walton Goggins points out that, the kids really aren't the problem here.
Right.
The kids aren't the ones making the world suck, Santa. And yet you're the one who takes, they're the ones you're taking all this out on. Why, it's almost like all of society abuses kids to make up for its own massive flaws. And Santa is just like the face of that.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry, I'm getting real political with my Santa here, which the movie should have done. I shouldn't be having to do this. The movie should be doing this.
I will say this, though. Yeah. In the film's defense.
Okay.
In Walton Goggins' condo, on the wall, you see it a couple times. It's behind him. It's on the wall above the fireplace. It's a painting of a car.
Okay.
That painting hung in the Ottawa Art Gallery. I have seen it. I spent long minutes staring at it. It's a fabulous painting, and I'm very happy that it made it into the movie.
So you're saying see this for the set design?
Or just like go look at the painting somewhere.
Painting alone.
You know, you could just see that painting online, right? Like you can just see that painting whenever you want. It's not hard to see.
You realize how weak that argument is.
I noticed like piece of art.
When you said in the film's defense, I thought you were going to defend the film. Color me naive for thinking
the
that.
The font choice that they use
for the title. Oh my God. Some next level fonts here.
Whoever was in charge of decorating that set knew what they were doing because they went to the Ottawa Art Gallery and they got and a they great got painting that on painting. The wall.
Okay. There we go. All right. Chef's kiss at the set design. All right.
That review is going at the top of the ad campaign.
Oh my God. Mediocre in every way that it counts, but oh my God.
Painting
the paintings and the walls in this movie. So the thing is, it's like, I'm glad I watched it. I am. Like, I wish it had been better, but I am glad I watched it and I did find it interesting. But it's like this one of those things where at its core, it's just, there are these central flaws that keep me from being able to sign off on it.
It's a real bummer because I did really want to love it.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Brings up so many things to say and then never says anything about them.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, oh. But hey, you know what? Walton Goggins, fantastic.
Yep.
Mel Gibson's fantastic. Even the guy who plays the lead elf is really damn good.
Yeah.
He's so entertaining. He's
Little Billy's good too, because you hate the little fun.
Oh God, no.
You do.
You despise Little Billy. He's fantastic. Like one of the most entertaining Christmas movie villains in ages.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's that. Do we have any narcissism to watch?
No.
I don't know why. I really liked that line reading. I don't know why.
Thanks. It was real hard on it. Practice in front of the mirror.
Bravo, Rob.
Yeah. Film Threat. I'll post review up there sometime soon. Just haven't had a chance to recently, but yes, I have some reviews getting ready to be posted up in filmthreat.com.
Fantastic. And of course, I'm continuing to cover the new season of Criminal Minds over at Profiling Criminal Minds.
Ah, it's great. It's podcast. Great. It's great. I'm here for it.
Such a fantastic season so far. It's both like, it's both terrible in all of the ways Criminal Minds is normally terrible, but at the same time, it's doing like legitimately really good storytelling stuff in other parts.
No, this is everything you love about Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
It's terrible and wonderful, and you're not really sure like which part is which.
Yeah. It's a ton of fun, and I would recommend, I wholly recommend the new season of Criminal Minds. Like, it has the potential to be the best Criminal Minds has ever been, if they can stick the landing, which, well, we're going to have to wait 2 months, but maybe.
I will give them credit. They are marketing the hell out of it. I've seen probably like 4 or 5 ads for it of recent here.
Wow.
In my viewing experience.
No, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, like, finally looks,
just it finally that looks great. It looks so good.
Because Criminal Minds never looked great. It always had that flat soap opera lighting where your only priority was get the lighting even on everybody's faces so we don't have to
reshoot.
Everyone
in the frame. Yeah. Everyone looks great.
Go. Everyone's in the frame. Everyone's makeup's fine. Everyone's hair fine. There are no shadows. Okay, let's go. That is the cinematography of Criminal Minds up until now. Now it actually looks interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a big change, and
Garcia,
I love it.
Garcia, she stood up to Rossi. Yes, love it.
Oh, we do love it. All right.
So
good. So, I guess that's that. Is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit Ava's blog at theava.com. You can stream old episodes there. You can leave us a comment and tell us about how much you love the new Criminal Minds, because who gives a shit about Christmas horror movies? You can send us an email at theava@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you're listening on an app, oh my God, rate, review, subscribe. No more wine for me.
All right, I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. But until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And I've been the leader of Local Elf Union 536. Toy workers unite!
Thanks for watching, and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
Bye.